On this week's episode of A Slice of Golf, Tim lets loose about how much he loves everything about winter golf. There's Bryson, Tiger, and some real hacker shenanigans going on in the Bahamas, and we do a deep dive on golf club memberships, why we aren't members, and what golf clubs need to do about it. As ever, today is brought to you by me, Ben Fowlis.
Me, Tim Williams.
And myself, Chris Wright.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of A Slice of Golf with me and the boys. It's been an eventful week of sorts for at least one of us, me kind of included. Mr. Wright, I'm going to come straight to you, buddy. What's been going on this past week? Have you been out at all on the golf course?
This is going to be a really simple, quick answer for you. I've not been out on the course. I have not done my homework. So, no. Limited.
So, that's... That belting range session you had last week where something clicked. We have no update on whether that is still the case or...
Zero update on whether that's still the case. All I've got is planned for range sessions this week.
Right, interesting. Make sure you've, you've got...
Sorry, really short and sweet answer for you.
Just make sure you've got your notes and all of your lesson, your post-lesson objectives down, because make sure that's...
Well, I've got it written down. Application is the weak part at the moment.
I'll go next because Tim's is it's going to be quite a juicy one, I think. So for me, I've been doing a bit, got a bit going on, but nothing on course. I had a lesson yesterday, and it's kind of similar to what we were speaking about last week, Tim. It's amazing how when you look at videos, such minor things can feel absolutely major, and just how kind of the minor tweaks, just night and day difference. Look at the two videos side by side. It's just a change in my wrist angle at the top of the backswing and then at impact. And the shot shape has gone immediately from high soft fade into slight right to left draws and the occasional pull. So, yeah, lesson for me yesterday. Back to the range tomorrow, potentially to the range Friday. Another update in terms of clubs. Obviously, for those who've been listening for a while, you know I had my pitching wedge snapped. Was not self-induced. Had my pitching wedge snapped probably a month or so ago. Decided and realised I can't really live without it, or live without a pitching wedge. So I basically just did a do as I say, not as I do scenario. Took all the numbers from my wedges that I've got currently, where I play 50, 54, 58, and I just use those to order the same type of wedge, secondhand, same lie, shaft, everything. So that came through today, which is cool. And then I've got a putter fitting on Friday. So there's a bit going on. No whinging, no babying people around a golf course this week for me. I'm not wet, I'm not cold, so I've been loving life. So, with that teeing up, Mr. Williams, tell us how you love winter golf, buddy.
Right, I'm gonna set the scene on this one. So I was really excited midweek. Well, midweek I was really excited because I'd got a range organised with two of the boys, and we were going to be teeing off at one, about midday on Sunday just gone. Day later realised, actually, I really need to do stuff in the afternoon. So I very sort of cap in hand went back to the boys saying, yeah, can we shift that midday tea time to like a morning one? Can we go for like an 8:30 a.m? Now, fair play to the boys. They were like, yep, yeah, fine. No problem at all. So I went to bed on Saturday night, and you do that classic thing of, right, I'm playing golf tomorrow. Let's have a look at what the weather's doing. Because right now on Saturday night, and I'm sure it's the same for a lot of people up and down the country, absolute biblical rain on Saturday night. So I was already thinking, right, so chances are the course is already going to be pretty soggy no matter what happens weather wise tomorrow. Looked at the weather forecast, and I think the forecast was about 6 degrees with 6 degrees with a 16% chance of rain at 8 a.m. and kind of stayed around that for the remainder of the round. So I was like, fine, absolutely no problem, I can deal with 16% chance of rain, no questions asked. Woke up 6:30 Sunday morning, really excited. Immediately heard the rain hammering on the window. I was like, that doesn't sound like 16% chance of rain. But anyway, got all the layers on. I was long johns, I was base layer, I was winter gloves were in the bag, multiple hats. was like, okay, let's just see what this brings. So jumped in the car, got down to Purley Station to pick up our pal John. So it was, I think, 7:30 a.m. on Sunday morning. I was sat in the car in the pitch black outside the station. It was at that time 4 degrees and sleet. I was like, oh, this simply has to get better. This has to get better. Because you always have that thing of thinking, well, it's 4 degrees now, but it'll get a little bit warmer as we get on. As we're driving to the course, I'm actually seeing the temperature drop to the point. We got to the club and it was 2.5 degrees. I was like, wow, this is now getting quite polar.
You know, it's getting cold when the 0.5 comes out. That doesn't happen when it's respectable temperatures.
It's when the actual the temperature display not only gives you the temperature, but it puts a little snowflake next to you just to tell you, yeah, it's like close to freezing outside.
It's really cold. Yeah,
yeah, it's really, really cold. So turn up at the club. We were at Parkwood Golf Club this week. Kind of very similar neck of the woods to North Downs we played a couple of weeks ago. I'll talk about the club itself at the end. We get there. Yeah, we get out of the car, 2.5 degrees, still sleeting, really strong winds. And the three of us are sort of stood in the car park looking at each other like, let's be really honest. Do we genuinely fancy this today? Because the club itself said hotel and spa. And there was, I swear down, there's a genuine conversation of, should we just bin this off and go to the spa for the morning? It's a nice way to spend a Sunday morning. We thought, no.
I would have considered it. I'd have been like, sure, let's do that.
We thought, no, we've come all this way. We'll give it a go. We'll go out. If it's really bad, we'll play 9 and we'll come in and whatever, have some coffees. Done. Weather didn't get any better at all. So 8:30, we're there on the tee. No warm-up because their driving range was closed. So no chance of warm-up. Not even practice nets. I mean, I had a few kind of like token putts on the putting green, which at that point it had so much rain that there was like standing water on the putting greens. I was like, well, this is pointless. And then, yeah, as we got into it, so first tee, horizontal rain going on, wind. It's one of those you've got the flagpoles are behind you for like the club, and you can actually hear them rattling and swaying a little bit. You're like, oh, Jesus. So anyway, tee off, go out, go down towards the, you're approaching the green, and you've got like a bit of a 50-60 yard approach shot to come in. I said to the boys, right,
smart.
I'm not fanning around with chipping today. I'm bump and running as much as I can. Smart until you realize that the greens are essentially waterlogged. So even a bump and run sort of rolls on and then just stops. Like, oh, right. So not only is it wet and very soggy today, because of the greens, it's actually going to require quite a detailed short game, which, by the way, I don't have. Let's be super clear. And it was a real battle. The course itself, by the way, really good course, really, really, really good course. Long, I think off the yellows, it was about, nice. I think it was something like 6,600, something like that, off the yellows. So, you know, not short. But the course itself, really good fun, really good variety. No two holes the same. Tough.
Also, I imagine would feel much, much longer when you're standing on the tee box, hitting a drive into horizontal sleet coming at you.
It felt long and it felt cold and it felt wet. And it's one of those where, as I say, because the greens were heavy, a bump and run could work, but a lot of times you kind of did need to be kind of pitching and chipping. And it was just one of those days where, because it was that soggy, it was like you try and, you know, hit like a detailed chip and the number of just absolute slicing a cake came into it. You know, club head goes hard behind the ball into the ground, ball goes about a foot, and you think,
in wet conditions, you very quickly find out if your chipping technique has any form, because if you were away, hit the ball fat, you will not get away with it in winter. Just
And if you then overcorrect the other way and it's 2 degrees, you're going to know about that as well.
Yeah, exactly. So most of us came dressed for the weather. Our pal John, for whatever reason, forgot to pack a waterproof. No idea what he was thinking.
What was he thinking?
No idea what he was thinking. I sort of said to him in the car park, like, do you not just have one of these just in your bag at all times? Like, it shouldn't be a case of having to take it out and pack it. It should just be in there, right? It should just be, like, after sort of September sort of time, waterproofs have just got to be in the bag,
I agree,
ready to go, surely. It was the extent where he was sort of going to the pro shop, oh, maybe they'll have waterproof here, like a bar. I was like, no. Like, well, one of two things is going to happen. Either they're not going to have any, or they're going to be about 240 quid. So either way, I doubt you're going to come out there with one. They didn't have any waterproof. So he played it basically a padded gilet and a mid layer. So I don't know if he's got like pneumonia or something now. But, I mean, he just looked brutal.
Have you heard from him since?
Doesn't surprise me at all. Absolutely,
it's like Everest. He's frozen solid on the 16th green, just not moved since.
Yeah, and it was just one of those days where like we've covered chipping. There was one point where I had a downhill putt, and I could see like a line of water saturation between me and the hole. So I was already like, I literally have no idea how hard I need to hit this putt, because if I try and hit it soft, it's just going to stop. If I try and get it through the water, chances are it's just going to fly past the hole. So putting was very difficult. There was also a conversation we had, because there was a long par five, uphill, wind in, it's winter, and it was 520 yards. Uphill par five, thinking that is going some on any day, but today when it's sideways, sleet and wind, I don't fancy that one. So unsurprisingly, none of us set the scorecard alight. Fair to say, I think that between the three of us, I think in points wise, I think we were like 29, 28, 27.
Okay.
I was 27, so I was the lowest on the day. So I think I was like 55 shots for 11 points on the front nine. So I was like, great, really, really glad I got out of bed and battled through this one for those points. Better on the back nine, 16 points on the back nine. So I felt a little bit better coming off the back nine, but, not enough to kind of say, yeah, that was a great day on the links. And it was one of those.
I'm so pleased I got out of bed this morning.
It was one of those where like we finished putting out on the 18th, and it was kind of like, I genuinely don't even think we shook hands. We basically evacuated the green and ran into the clubhouse. And just had
for a nice cold and pint had hot chocolates to warm up.
Because we couldn't stomach a pint. We were that cold. So
a lovely hot chocolate. Wait, with marshmallows, cream? What are we talking?
No. This is
we're talking instant hot chocolate.
This is a scoop of powder out of the brown, the purple pot that gets touched very infrequently, and then too much milk, so you felt incredibly bloated afterwards. Now, in the past, I've kind of said to have the motivation of like a lot of people mentioning no names, Fowlis. Hate playing in the wet, and how I've sort of said in the past, you know, I'll have the ambition of kind of relishing playing in the wet and sort of saying, you know, if 75% of the people I'm playing with think, oh, I really wish we weren't playing in the rain, and playing in the rain is rubbish, and if I could not think like that, I'll probably be in a better place than them. That's fine, but this winter golf, this Sunday, it sucked. Yeah. Winter golf, like when it's like that, is rubbish. Absolutely rubbish.
I mean, I am terrible for it. There's no denying that. I kind of, whenever I'm out there, I'm like, right, this is the day that I turn it round, and I have a word with myself, like on a tee box, like, it's just a bit of rain, suck it up and get through it. And then a hole later, you're like, no, this is shit. I still hate it. This sucks. I have to admit, I'm surprised and impressed as soon as I saw the Instagram stories, I was surprised you were out, but I was surprised and impressed that all 18 holes were finished, because, you know, I know you three like a round of golf, but I thought even that would be enough to end it, because it didn't look pleasant out there. Was there at any point a look across the green like, yeah, do you fancy heading in?
To be fair, there actually wasn't. We actually all stuck to it, because after a while it just became just a bit of a laugh, almost like, what are we doing? Like, is this... but I mean, it's to encapsulate it, I think there's like just situations that we've probably all been in, but like Sunday was like they were all in the one round. And what I mean by that is I feel like we've all been stood on a green, like lining up a putt, and the wind is so much that your trousers are just absolutely like rattling around your ankles as you're lining up a putt. And like you're trying to concentrate on the putt, but there's definitely a little bit of your brain which is thinking, this is really cold and really windy, and I'm not actually sure how much fun this is anymore. Other kind of shots, again, rolled into one is when you strike a good, let's say a good 3-wood off the tee, but you're hitting into the wind. So you think you've connected well. And like there's one point where it's almost like, it's like still midair, and it's almost like you look at it, it's like that ball almost looks like it's stopped and it's hovering and potentially coming back to me. So that definitely happened a few times. And other than that, you've just got the kind of, if you're playing out of the rough, one of two things will happen. For example, like you may connect with it semi-decent and instantly you'll just have like basically a what looks like a fecal Jackson Pollock on the front of your trousers, because you've got all the feedback from the mud going straight onto the front of your trousers. Gears are ruined within like minutes of starting playing. Or
yeah, but I assume you went with black. I assume you weren't stupid enough to go with anything other than black trousers.
I was in grey trousers with a grey and white waterproof. So I was in very light colours, actually, which was
really bold.
Silly.
Really bold.
Yeah. So all in all, a weirdly fun round just because of how ridiculous it was. Yep. But also, and I mean this with all sincerity, I'm not sure how much golf I want to play in the next few weeks. It might just be a case of battening down the hatches, being diligent on the practice, getting a few lessons in. I'd say probably going harder on the lessons during the winter, during the off season. Yep. Just trying to work on some real, real fundamentals. I genuinely think the next time I go out will actually be New Year's Eve day, when I've potentially got a round booked in, but nothing before then.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. And the club. I completely forgot to tell you more about the club. So this is Parkwoods Golf Club. I'd never heard of it in my life. And unless you know it's there, you literally won't find it. It's kind of like off this country lane, then up a hill, and then out of nowhere, you got this driveway and a very modern clubhouse is there. Now, what I think has happened is because it's something like Parkwoods by like Odiva or something. So I think Odiva or Odiva are probably like a holding company that have bought the club and are in the process of regenerating it, because the clubhouse looks very new, not quite sure if they know what to do with various bits of it. But we paid, and admittedly, yes, it was winter round and it was very, you know, not lovely conditions. But bear in mind, we had an 8:30 tea time. On a weekend, we paid £31.
Yeah, really good.
Which is ridiculous.
Pretty decent. The week before that, as mentioned, when we played North Downs, that was £25 at midday. So there's definitely some good value to be had out there. The course, really, really good fun. Definitely recommend it. No, as I say, not a lot of the holes are the same. You've got, you know, par fours where you're hitting down into a valley, then up over a hill. You've kind of got par threes, which you're going over ponds. You've got the uphill 520-yard par five, as I mentioned. But good challenging, and actually, like, I know it was a bit soggy, but really well maintained. So I can recommend it. I'd never heard of it before, but it was good. I didn't love it quite as much as North Downs. That's still probably the one that's been kind of the big find, I would say, of this year for me. How come? I just really, really enjoyed it.
How come it was less rated less than North Downs?
Say again?
How come you'd rate it less than North Downs?
North Downs had a really lovely local community golf club feel to it. Awesome. In that we walked into the clubhouse that time. Oh, sorry, we walked into the clubhouse that time, and it was like the lady who was serving behind the bar was like just really excited to have us there, and was like talking us through the course and like saying, "Oh, on this hole, you need to watch out for that and that." Not only saying that before we went out, but remembered she'd told us about that when we came back in 4 hours later and said, "So how did you get on with that hole?" But also things like,
that's so good.
The clubhouse itself is like, and I'm going to get very wanky here. It was like a mock Tudor look with like wrought iron chandeliers, just and a fire in it. It's just really nice.
I've got the website for Parkwood in front of me here. So they host the PGA Euro Pro Tour events, which is obviously a couple of tours below European Tour or WP World Tour. They also own, by the looks of it, Surrey Downs Golf Club and Oakland Park Golf Club. So they've obviously got a couple of, or three at least, golf courses in there.
Mm.
In their, what do you call it? Locker? I don't know. it looks really nice. Cool. Like, again, isn't it funny how, and I always say this, I'm totally judge a book by its cover when it comes to golf course websites. Like if I go onto a golf course website and I'm like, I can't even figure out what the pictures are showing. And it looks rubbish. I'll often miss out on golf courses that I know could be absolute gems. But I like going onto a website and seeing good photography.
Yeah, but you said that last week about North Downs. You pulled North Downs up on the look of its website, and I told you to not be so not to be so shallow.
I get that.
I mean, some golf clubs, some golf clubs are stuck in a time warp. I mean, come on, 21st century website, surely it's got to be first port called.
Not even website. Like you've got to have some half decent pictures of your golf course. Sure. Like, I mean, you've got to show off your product, haven't you?
Unless they don't want people to know about it because it's so secretive and so nice, and
that's okay if you're Queen. That's okay if you're Queenwood and you're charging hundreds of thousands of pounds a year. When you're charging a £28 green fee, it's not quite the same, is it? You kind of need as many of those as you physically can get.
How kind of going back on where you played this weekend, Tim? How many other lunatics were out on the course? Was it just
it was
you?
Fully booked.
Really?
God. Yep. Fully booked, and there were people behind us. We let a two ball through. We were obviously one of the early birds going out. By the time we sort of checked in with the pro shop, had our pre-round coffee, car park was kind of like getting half full. So we're like, okay, more lunatics. Good. Always good. We're in good company. And someone had actually, I've rarely seen this. Someone actually turned up full kit with bag, hadn't booked, just turned up to the club saying, "Can I get around?"
They were probably assuming that everyone had bailed and was like not playing.
Well, exactly. And he was probably told, "No, sorry, we have no tea times at all today." Like, wow.
Fair play to that golf club. It's clearly got it.
The winter golfers are out in force.
Got something going for it, that's for sure. If people are still willing to go out and play that. Right, moving on, something to on the other side of the world and completely opposite conditions. Just a few things to quickly talk about from the PGA Tour that was played in Bahamas. Quite an interesting tournament because it is Tiger's tournament, and it was only 20 players, and it's some of the best players in the world, so it's quite an elite field. So I have to admit, it piqued my interest more than the other tournaments have recently, as I alluded to last week. Still didn't watch any of it, but was keeping an eye on the app. And I think it's a result that pleases all three of us, and in particular, Chris. I mean, Victor Hovland, I mean, he's going to have some career, isn't he? Comes from six shots back to win, and he's now up to seven in the world, I believe, which is huge. Saw a stat on social media. Obviously, as we see everything nowadays, of his 50 starts so far, that makes it 5 wins, 11 top threes, 29 top 25s, and $8.9 million in tournament prize money earned. So, you know, a sensational career, and really he's only just getting started. You know, that is an excellent career for most people.
I haven't actually checked the stats on this, so this could be utter bullshit, but and this comes from, like you, Ben, I didn't watch any of it live. I was watching a lot of the highlights each day, and obviously in the highlights they just show the good shots. But we said last year, if Victor Hovland could learn to chip and putt, he's going to be a boss. And it looked like he was dropping putts from anywhere and everywhere over the weekend. So I'd be interested to see what his actual strokes gained were on the putts. But we've always said if he can sort out his chipping and putting, he'll be a force. And again, if he comes out firing, sure, he got a little bit of help from Morikawa on the final day, but he put himself right where he needed to be was able to take the win, which is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, Morikawa is where I was going to take it. It was because Hovland coming back from six shots back to take the win. Yeah, not all that surprising. He is a sensational golfer. To come from six shots back to beat Colin Morikawa. Yes. Now, that's a surprise. I mean, he hit two golf balls out of bounds from centre of the fairway, one was centre of the fairway, the other one was slightly on a bank and put it straight in a tree. I think that's the beauty of that golf course, is that you can be, I mean, quite literally could have been the best player in the world had he won there, because the number one ranking was up for grabs. And if you are slightly offline, as was the case in Bahamas, you can lose balls. Now, how often have we spoken about changing the golf course setup to add a bit of spice to it instead of just the whole bomb it and just go and get it and hit it again approach? Well, Bahamas has that. And a few of the players got in some tricky situations. The amount of highlights on the PGA Tour on the Instagram page of people playing like left-handed shots out of bushes, trying to play through bushes, players losing balls. And the difference between the player who come first and last, it was Jordan Spieth, was over 20 shots, I think. So if you did start playing pretty averagely, there's a bad score in there as well.
I mean, Jordan Spieth didn't help himself, which I think we're probably going to come on to.
Well, go on then, you've teed it up. Do you want to take it away?
Well, sure. If anyone hasn't seen this, go to the PGA Tour Instagram, or even on, I think it's on their YouTube as well, and just watch the interview with Spieth and Stinson, because it is comedy value 10 out of 10. Post round, what you figure out is that they've both been penalized. Was it two shots they were penalized? Because they played from the wrong tee box. And in their defense, it was the tee box that they'd used on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It's just on Sunday. They decided they were going to play from a different tee box. Spieth and Stenson obviously had a memo or weren't listening and still teed it up at the original tee box. And
the thing is, it's not just each other that missed it.
The caddies.
It's the markers that were with them. It's the caddies. It's a good few people that were there that didn't say a thing. Because they were...
Aren't we supposed to be playing from somewhere else? Like one person. Just put... If you're thinking it, say it. If you're thinking it, say it. Just give us something.
I think it's also a sign of just like, look, the guys that are probably last in a tournament, all they're thinking is, let me just nudge the ball round, get my paycheck, and let's get the bloody hell out of here. I'm not going to be here to win it. So neither of them, they're probably both so switched off at that point, knowing that they're more than 20 shots back from really achieving anything in the tournament. So we're just like, oh, sod it, let's go. Quite amusing. Can't say I've ever seen that in the pros before, and I don't think I've ever done it myself. I don't know.
Also, what confused me a little bit, watching the highlights of them do it, they've still got the tee box markers on the tee, like, if that makes sense. They've still got the bits. So I was like, if you're not using that tee box, surely you'd remove those.
No, they were. It's because they switched them. They switched them for the final round. Holes 9 and 11, they basically kind of play across each other. Yeah. They switched them over, which from the PGA Tour standpoint, I didn't really understand that. I thought that was just a bit odd.
That was the one place which I was like, you know what? It sounds really stupid without the context, but when you realise that's what's going on, I thought 100% I would do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So all they've done, so it was still an active tee box, just an active tee box for a different hole.
Different hole, yeah.
Right. That is confusing.
Like, not caught, but like, he was like, he'd like teed up just in front of the market as well.
Well, it started off. He put the peg in the ground, and his caddy goes, "Jordan, it's not you to tee." So he's like, "Right, Stenson stepped up, teed off." Then Spieth tried to tee off in front of the tee box, and was like, "Jordan, back you come." And then just to put the cherry on top of that, fuck show of a cake. It turns out it was completely the wrong tee box. So they had ample opportunities to correct it as well, because it wasn't like they stepped up and were ready to fire and they just went. So bravo to those two. I don't think I've ever seen that before on the PGA Tour. Don't think we'll ever see it again. So well done for them. Mm-hmm. Only other bit of news from me is Tiger was seen hitting balls every single day, and he even showed up in Sunday Red on, well, obviously Sunday.
Just, I need to say,
boys, anything more to add from the weekend?
The Tiger front. So, well, two things. I mean, there's always loads of things to talk about when it comes to Tiger, but two things that stuck out for me. One, the chat around how he's, in terms of potential comeback rounds, how the one he's actually targeting is the one with his son. Love that that's like the first target. And I want that to happen just because I just enjoy seeing how they have exactly the same ridiculous swing. It's ridiculous.
It's just absolutely fate, isn't it? It was fate, yeah, that he was always going
to
be.
I think it also again comes back to showing where his motivations, yes, lie in life right now.
Absolutely. And the only other thing, weird thing to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. Is it just me, or does he look really jacked at the moment?
Really jacked. Yeah, but like just absolutely stacked.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's been hitting the gym, hasn't he?
Has been
the
putting other body. That time off to good use. Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Press conference back. I was like, Jesus. Either he's like been using those crutches a lot, or he's in the gym.
Just doing a lot of upper body work.
Yeah.
So instead of striking the fear of God when he walks into the changing rooms because it's Tiger, and now they're striking the fear of God into him because it's just jacked monster walking in.
He comes back from that. He comes in looking like that, having had like major surgery, you know, a really, really serious car accident. Bryson turns up. He's been trying to like look like that from like 18 months of like hard graft in the gym and like doing everything he can. He must just look up and be like, fuck's sake, get me.
I mean, if he'd come back with a bit of a beer belly and totally out of shape, you'd be like, that's fine. You've had
you've
not been able to do anything. No, you've come back in better shape than where you were before. Fine, whatever.
Something that's just kind of just provoked me then. Did either of you two seen the statements coming out of Bryson over the past day or two?
I've seen a couple of interviews with him, on I can't remember which golf website, but into like mental health and saying that he was like ready to pack it all in, etc.
Basically he was saying how kind of really upset with how this past year has gone, and in typical Instagram fashion, all the keyboard warriors were out kind of keen to get their piece and start teeing off. Now, I don't condone any time that anyone receives any abuse, and I think we've all spoken about it, that all the stuff that was going on the course was just weird when he was playing. All the Brooksy stuff just got boring and borderline. Well, it went way over the mark. Just kind of wanted to get your two thoughts on Bryson coming out with that.
Chris, you want to go?
I should have shared this with you before the podcast. I didn't realize we were going to talk about it, but I should have shared it with you anyway. I will find the article, share it, and I'll share it in this week's email out to the Sunday Red crew as well. There's a really, really interesting insight into Bryson saying that he spoke to Chris Pratt, the actor who was in Guardians of the Galaxy, Jurassic Park, etc., and had a really, really good conversation with him, and talking, and Chris Pratt's advice was, I'm going to butcher this, but it was something along the lines of, you have to separate the character of you on the golf course to the character of who you are off the golf course. And he said it was that piece of advice that really allowed him to get comfortable with, you know, him being him off the golf course and him being this character on the golf course, which I think is really interesting from like several different lines of thought. One, it really highlights, okay, to me, are we going down the whole WWE players have their own? And we've said that months ago, didn't we, with this whole situation. We said this is turning into a show. This is turning into, you know, Bryson v. Brooks is, I mean, I don't, my wrestling knowledge at best. So I'm not even going to go there. But it's going to turn into, you know, that wrestling kind of vibe. And I think that's, I think from what I understood of what Bryson was saying was he was taking that and all the energy he was getting from around that character on the golf course from that feud and taking it home with him and being like, okay, that's who I am. That's what that's. And he wasn't okay with that. And he was like, I'm not in it for those. I'm not in it for this. And that's not what I want it to be. And that's where he was saying, I don't want to be a part of this. And I think from my understanding of this conversation that he had with Chris Pratt was, you know, look, it's okay to be a character on, you know, in the golf course. It's okay. Like he, Chris Pratt obviously plays many different characters in all the different films and gets a level of love, hate, meh-ness in between. And is okay because that's a character that he's playing. It's not actually him. And I think that's what he was saying to Bryson, which was really interesting feedback for me. And I think quite an interesting approach and thought process around it, really.
I mean, from my point of view, my thoughts are firstly, massively commend him for coming out and saying it, because frankly, in all life, but particularly I'd say in professional sport, mental health needs a forum. It needs to kind of be less of a taboo thing to talk about. Now, whatever you think of him, and you know, I would never say I have been his number one fan down the years, but whatever you think of him, look, he's doing a project and he's following a goal, firstly. And you know, whether you agree with it or not, someone working towards a goal is always commendable. Also, whatever you think of him, look, ultimately he's still a human being. And I think the Chris Pratt thing is interesting in the sense of having an on-course persona and off-course persona. And I think it's great if you are able to do that. Mm. But I think not everyone can.
No,
I think not everyone can switch on and off, because, you know, even if you think about it in a regular line of work, some people, you could have like a really, really crap day at work. There'll be some people that as soon as they leave the office door, basically, they leave the work at home. But there's a lot of people who will take that crap day home with them.
Imagine having that crap day and then having hundreds or thousands of people on your back and then getting home to see thousands of comments and Instagram. That would be horrible.
I mean, it's horrible for the person it's happening to on the one hand, because you know you've got those thoughts in your head and that follows you around. It's also really bad for the people that are around him, you know, his loved ones, because ultimately they're going to get a pretty crap version of him and not get the best of him if he's kind of dealing with all that kind of stuff. So look, we could go on for ages on this, and look, I'm not going to go too much into it because I am not an expert on, you know, mental health awareness and all those kind of things. But I think, look, it's a really important reminder, I think, for fans everywhere. And, you know, I completely include myself in this completely, that every now and then we probably just need to have a bit of a look at ourselves and be like, look, let's just chill out a little bit. These are still people at the end of the day. These are still people that go home. You know, they're not just kind of like they're not cartoons on TV. They are still people that go home to their families, to their loved ones. You know, they go on holiday like the rest of us. They have celebrations like the rest of us. They have bad days like the rest of us. So every now and then, just stop, pause, and be a bit like, maybe let's just rein in a little bit.
I just think I've never ever understood the need, the drive, whatever it is, to go in and let rip into someone, like have a go at them, like, and I get a Gloria thing, and I'm like, would you say that shit in person? Absolutely not. But don't say it online. Like, the same rules apply, you dickhead. Like, don't be a twat. Like, just like don't be an idiot. Like, it's just it drives me nuts that people think
it's okay to say this stuff
because they're on. And this is, again, obviously this is not a new topic, because this is what social media is. I don't know if they're trying to deal with it, but it's so prevalent, isn't it? Just, you cannot put abuse.
I think the problem is with the Bryson situation is I think people are also saying it to him in person.
It may be,
you know, shouting it in amongst the crowd, so they know they're not going to get found out. You know, they've done a good job in finding enough people out to throw them out of tournaments. But
is it different to football? Is it different? Because if a football, like, and players get loads of crap from the sidelines, why is that
so
different?
So I've thought about this, and yes, I think it is with golf, because I actually think the golf spectators that are doing it when they're at the event, I actually think it's similar to the, I guess, similar to the thought processes for why they do it online. Now, I think with football, I think, it's a weird one.
Unless you happen to be the guy on the end of a Cantona flying karate kick.
Now, golf is different in that much sparser crowds. You have the ability as a spectator to get your voice heard on the TV. And I think that's a really, really, really big difference, because I think what a lot of the motivation is, and I don't want to say it's just, you know, our friends across the pond, but I suspect it might be a little more, bit more prevalent, is I think there's a sense of a bit more from a golf spectator, or that kind of golf spectator, who is, I'm going to have my minute. I'm going to have my little time where I'm going to get my little funny thing. I'm going to shout that out and it's going to be heard on TV, right? I'm going to be the one that's going to be caught saying the funny thing that's like, oh, I'm going to say, like, nice one, Brooksy. And I think that's a little bit similar to kind of how people...
Are you basically talking like bros behavior, lad behavior?
Well, I'm not necessarily just saying like bros or whatever, but I think there's a bit of the kind of the guys that do it, right, the people that do it, I imagine they're the same people that probably record the coverage of the event they're going to, then go back that night and try to look through the coverage for their little moment when they shout out their little jokey slogan so they can go to their mates, oh, aren't I funny?
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's a little bit similar to the social media thing, because I think it's people trying to kind of have their voice heard and trying to kind of get like the funny, what they see as the funniest joke or the most outrageous comment. I think it's closer to that than it is football.
And I think, unfortunately, if you look at, like, Twitter is a toxic place. I've said that a lot, but if you look at Facebook comments, I'm quite sad like this. When I see an article get released or something, I spend more time looking at the comments than I do anything else, because I want to see what people's reaction to a thing is. And you'll often see someone who puts in a super negative comment. That's the most engaged with comment. And you kind of go, okay, what we're essentially teaching this person is put more shitty comments out there and you'll get more attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there's a difference between football and golf. Golfers, you know, it's not that an emotional sport. There's not split seconds things which happen. It's, if you are going to abuse someone there, you are going with a premeditated thought of, I am going to say this at this point. Football, rightly or wrongly, a lot of it's driven on split second emotion, where people just go absolutely.
Oh, it's still wrong in football. I'm still not.
It's still wrong. Yeah, that's why I said it's definitely not right. But golf, you're actively thinking today, I'm going there to abuse this one person when he hits a tee shot or whatever. And unfortunately, there is an element of it. He's made a rod for his own back from a perspective of, look, he built the monster without realizing what the monster was going to become. He stoked the fire by playing into the hands. And it's definitely going to be a point where the reason why he's talking about it now is he's probably looking back and thinking, I regret that, actually. I don't think it's done me any good. It's not done my brand any good. It's not done my game any good. That's probably why we're hearing about it now.
I mean, all joking aside, we're talking about Bryson in a positive light here. And before all this, we weren't talking about Bryson in a positive light.
Yeah. And I have to admit, on the backside of it, you know, I was a big Brooks fan prior to this whole thing. And I wasn't Bryson's biggest fan. And I have to admit, I've done a 180 on that. I am now a lot more warm towards Bryson because he seems a lot more human.
Yeah.
And Brooks just doesn't come across all that great.
Which ironically was the thing that we're like, Bryson doesn't seem, he seems like he's a side, like he, well, his thing was a scientist, right? And you weren't get, you, all you had was logic and you weren't getting that human side of him.
But whereas that's, now we've seen. Like, I think it's because he's done so many more interviews and podcasts and things. And like, when you actually listen to him talk and run through his process and why he's doing it all, he's actually a really engaging guy.
Mm.
And I think it just splitting that persona and having an on-course player and then the off-course guy, I just think was a very dangerous way to go. I don't like it at all. For me, you should just be that person.
I'll send that snippet to Chris Pratt and be like, Ben Fowler said that your advice sucks, just to let you know.
This is nobody says. You're wrong, mate. Oh. Right. Well, interesting. That took a turn. I wasn't expected, but good. Right. Something that we touched upon earlier, Tim was talking about kind of value and, you know, stuff that we've been talking about, you know, privately quite a bit. You know, we've all alluded to before that we aren't golf club members anywhere. We've all, you know, got our own unique reasons for this, but also we've got a lot of mutual reasons. But Tim posed the question into the group kind of last week, and it's I've written a lot of things down because of it, and I know you two are going to have a lot to say on it. So, Tim, I'll let you introduce kind of what you said and
so
why the thought process.
First came into my head, and I promise I'm not going to go into any more detail on North Downs Golf Club. They've had enough free airtime from me over the past 3 years. But
slice of golf, North Downs Golf Club.
But it's one of those where I sort of thought, oh, you know, it's a nice club. You know, what I wonder what the membership costs are. So I looked at the membership prices and thought, okay, that's the membership cost. I've seen it's comparable basically with a lot of other golf clubs. And it kind of got me thinking, right, the difference of looking at a golf membership cost on face value versus trying to work through different ways in your head for how to articulate that value. Because where I first came to was one of the reasons why I think a lot of people get put off playing golf is because of the perception that it's really, really expensive. And it's really, really expensive to be a member somewhere. So when I went sort of thinking down that thought process, I sort of, from my point of view, I thought, well, what I naturally will do when I'm looking at the value of something will be, right, what's a likely cost per use kind of ratio of looking at this? And does that cost per use for this particular thing outweigh something that's comparable? Now, what I mean by that is, I looked at some numbers, and the average cost of golf membership in the UK is about £1,300 a year. That's the average. Now, at an annual level, that is going to be about as top as it gets for kind of like sports club memberships, right? That works out, you know, fast maths, just shy of £110 a month. You know, if you go to a typical gym membership, average cost in the UK is about £50 a month. Obviously, that's a bit higher if you're in London can be £70-80 a month, but even still, it's not getting close to a gym membership.
Try 120 at some.
Exactly. I get why golf clubs will say that the memberships are more expensive, right? There's a lot more maintenance that needs to go on with the grounds, with the greens, with the staff, practice facilities, all those kind of things. I get that. So my personal way that I would evaluate a membership, and I've decided this is the new Tim Williams way of evaluating things. This is just me personally, is that I would look at, right, on a cost per use, purely of like rounds played, if I work it back to kind of on average right now, I'm playing probably somewhere between twice and three times a month right now as a nomad golfer. So considering probably what I pay for a typical round now, I would say probably around between £30 and £35 for a round right now. So what I did was I thought, right, if I'm playing three times a month and I'm paying sort of £33 for that round, that actually gets you up to about £1,200 a year if you consider a membership somewhere. And the way I would then look at it is thinking, right, if I'm paying £33 for a random golf club somewhere in the south of England, for example. Compare those courses that I'll be playing for about £33 to this course here, and what I get out of this course. Is this course is it better than those courses that I'm going to play elsewhere? And therefore, is the £33 I'm going to pay here going to be more valuable because the course is better? And then all the other associated benefits you get from a golf membership. So whether it be discounts on F&B, discounts on coaching, things like that. So I use that as kind of my guiding, I suppose, starting point for how what would be the benchmark for me. So that £1,200 membership, the way I've broken it down, yep. If you're paying once a month, so that's a very expensive round of golf. That's £100 every time you're playing golf. But to be honest, if you're taking a membership out and you're playing once a month, then you probably shouldn't be taking a membership out. If you're playing once a week, it's £23 a round. Much cheaper than if you're a nomad golfer. If you're playing twice weekly, obviously you have a few weeks off as the year goes on. It's about £13 a round. So again, much, much cheaper and much more beneficial than being a nomad golfer. Once you start going down to like twice a month, that's like £50. That's starting to get a bit more punchy for kind of your irregular golfers. So for me personally, where I am right now, a £1,200 per annum golf membership is right about where I think it should be for me and what I want out of it. But that's from a purely playing golf perspective. Where I'd also like to go with it is the associated benefits you get from that, because not without wanting to go down too much of a rabbit hole on this one. Members don't get any kind of discounts on things like ranges, driving balls at the range, short game facilities. I sort of alluded to discounted coaching. I don't know how many memberships actually do give you discounted coaching sessions, because any old Tim Williams can turn up to a golf club and go kind of book in with the club pro there or use their driving range. So I feel like members should have discounts on those kind of things. But the question
can I just quickly answer that bit for you, Jimbo? So yeah. that bit totally varies because, okay. And I know lots of clubs do have discounted member rates, but often the coaching professional is self-employed. They're not actually fine. Hired by the golf club, so they're running their own business within the golf club. So it's up to them whether they want to offer fine. Members a discount as a benefit or as a draw to get them into coaching with them. But it won't be covered by the golf club. Like, it's not like the golf club's fine. Going to pay the 15, 20, 25% discount that they're providing. So that is just a choice that the golf coach would make. But I do see coaches offering, even Tom, the guy I saw last time, I know he has if you're a member of the club, although saying that he is part owner of the golf club, so that probably still works in his favor. But yeah, I have seen golf coaches offering discounted members rates, etc., for sure.
Okay, so
I don't know how often it happens. Like, you're right, I don't know if it's a everywhere thing.
Fair enough. So I think going back to kind of, my sort of, I suppose, my reasoning and my way of equating the value back, I'd always do it back based on the cost of the cost per round of the likely number of rounds I'm going to play, and whether that's going to be a better value and a better experience at that club that I'm going to get from being a nomad golfer. And by my reckoning right now for me, that would mean a membership of a really, really nice, a really good quality golf club at about £1,200 would be, for me personally, appealing on that basis. You know, certain clubs, if you're going up towards sort of, I don't know, 1800, which a lot of clubs are, even if you're playing sort of three times a month, you're looking at a £50 round, which is just more, I'm going to pay less than that and still play good courses elsewhere personally.
But the question becomes then, okay, what's the actual question here? Because
the question is for each of us, how would we break down what is the right membership cost for us individually, and what's your process for working that out? That's the question.
Oh, fine. Okay, cool.
At this point, Chris realizes he's answered the question wrong.
Well, the root.
So, I'm more than happy to jump in, because I think where I sit with this is like, it doesn't matter. I could be offered a £20 per round average of a golf course, but I would see more value and I would rather opt for the £70-80 round of golf if all of my friends were members of that golf club. I personally, at this moment in time, don't see any value in taking membership at a golf club, because I have very few golfing friends that are members anywhere else. We are in a unique situation. I'm in East London. You boys are down in Surrey. Our friendship group is scattered all across London, all across Surrey. So for us to find a golf club that would be central for all of us, I think would be very difficult. And I don't see value in taking membership anywhere, regardless of how cheap it is, just because when I go out and play golf, yes, I ultimately want to play well. Yes, I love this game. But ultimately, I'm there first and foremost to get 4 solid hours with the boys out on the golf course, to which I wouldn't get doing any other sport. So, and I think particularly living in London, I don't have a car. It's tough for me to get anywhere. So that then would be factored into a cost. If I were to consider a club, it would have to be something similar to what our mate has, their golf club. I don't know of many golf clubs that offer this, but they seem to be very forward thinking. And Dolt said it's because there's a young guy running it and running the membership system. But he said, oh, it's a chalk based course as well. Excellent. So this might interest you.
Picked up immediately.
They are.
The factor, like, is the course actually playable during the winter? Because if it's not, that's...
Yeah. So this golf club offer, I think Dolts buys his membership based on 15 rounds of golf. So it's very, very similar to the membership that you had, Tim. But it is linked to just that golf club. But it's built for the young professional who can't justify paying X amount of thousands a year. They still want to play a really good quality course, but then they're just capped to 15 rounds because they might live out of town. Mm. Now there's a golf course that
shall I check? You know, the other place that does that is Guildford, where we went, and you can hear the we had a podcast on that a while ago. But Guildford were, and Tom, the club secretary, that I've heard explain it like that, and he was like, "Yeah, we're the membership. They switched from there's one membership fee, which is whatever it is, for unlimited golf for everybody," and he understood that it's bonkers that the people that will play the least, i.e. people like us, you're in your early 30s, you've bought your first house, you've got a kid on the way, like all of those things where you go, right, I can play twice a week. Yeah. You pay the highest membership fee. Sorry, twice a month, you pay the highest membership fee. And he understood that doesn't make sense. So they offer a tiered MIP whereby you can basically, you buy a membership and it gives you 20 rounds of golf, 30 rounds of golf, or 50 rounds, or whatever, and then you have your unlimited option. And everyone was like, sorry, Tim, yeah, go.
So that the only thing I was going to say there, so on a pro rata basis, does the cost of does the cost still stack up on that basis?
Yeah, like, so the round, to me,
sounds a little bit like when a gym, for example, you can get a 12-month membership or you can get a 3-month membership, and you know that the monthly cost on the 3-month membership, they jack that monthly cost right up.
Yeah,
so I want to make sure they're not doing the same thing with the effective cost of these rounds, is where I'm going with it.
They're not, but that also makes sense in the gym world because you're not committing and they still have to serve you as a client. But anyway, that's a whole different conversation. it's more expensive per round to buy the 20 round option. Of course it is. You're buying few, like that's common sense. And then it gets cheaper per round basis as you buy it. So the unlock obviously is the same cost as the original membership, but it works out way better than the 20 round pack that you get. But it still works out within our price bracket of the kind of rounds that we would play, if that makes sense. I think the reason why that's a really strong move for me personally is because A, I'm not playing that much golf. B, as in twice a month or whatever, Timbo, I'm the same as you. I want to play a good quality course at a price point that fits with our kind of standard green fee. And if I was able to get access to everything else that comes with the golf club, then that's a win for me. However, I'm still on Fowlis's side of the people I play golf with, they're all over the place and they're not all going to come to Guildford every week. And from that perspective, I then go, okay, so I'm basically saying I go get a membership, knowing that when I do that, I'm basically saying, screw you guys. Sorry. I'm not, I, like, we were playing twice a month. I'll now see you in 3 months' time. Like, and that's not okay for me.
Yeah. Do you think that'd be the way you go? If you did get a membership, would you become, feel like you couldn't go and play anywhere else? Like, would you feel like you were wasting your money if you went to play elsewhere?
No, that would
be a concern for me.
If I had a full membership that I'm paying, as Tim said, 120 to 150 quid a month for, I would then find it difficult or more difficult to say, yeah, let's just pop for a round at a different club, because I'd be like, oh, I've already paid for my week's round at Club X. I feel like, okay, now I'm just spending extra money. That, now that's 120 quid that's now turning into 200 quid a month because two away days a month, which doesn't start to make sense. But if you take those memberships where, okay, you know you're going to play 20 rounds of golf at Guildford over the course of the year, sure, then you go, okay, if I'm actually going to play 40 rounds of golf over the year, I'm happy to play 20 at Guildford, get my good rate of green fee there and 20 rounds with everybody else. That kind of makes sense. So yeah, I agree. You said it was Daltz who said that about his club. I think that's definitely a smart move from golf clubs. I think that's a really good way to bring people, bring a lot of people in. I'm just not sold yet.
Yeah, so I think as well, there's just, and it just seems to be something about golf clubs. I know we kind of bitch and dig them out on occasion. So a mutual friend of all of ours inquired a really nice club recently. His dad's a member, me and him were a member there as kids, and it's somewhere where I would like to be a member again in the future. So he inquired recently, got their brochure back for their prices. Now, they offer an out-of-town membership, but it's unlimited rounds. It's just slightly cheaper. You've got to be more than 50 miles from the club. So you're tied into a year's contract. 50 miles, that's a hell of a long way. Bear in mind, I don't qualify and I live an hour and a half from that golf course. They're still charging $2,000 a year for the course. Because I said to my mate, I was like, yeah, I'd consider it. And I'm like, you know, end of day, you get what you pay for. This golf course and this golf club is excellent. It is gorgeous. But being more than 50 miles away, so this is something that I said to him, was like, I would genuinely consider getting a membership there if they offered an out-of-town membership. The out-of-town where you practically got to be from outer space, because 50 miles is a hell of a long way. And then also the price, but the price point is fractionally less than their like full membership anyway. And I'm just like, I think the concept is just, it needs tweaking, because the concept on them is, I think, is just lost, because I can't imagine too many people, not in our age bracket, taking that up. And ultimately, you know, that's a niche and an aspect of the future of the club that you need to address.
Yeah, it's tricky though, because so I've got all kinds of discussion points here and I don't know where to take this. I definitely answered the question wrong, because I thought the question was around what do you deem as value for a golf club. You can find very good value in a club like the Wisley. You can find very good value in the club like Woburn. You can find very good value in a £20 a round club. Like, there is value at both ends of the spectrum. And just because something is out of my price range doesn't mean it's not good value. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think if somewhere's charging $5,000 a year membership, it doesn't immediately become not good value. It just means that I can't afford it. There's a big difference between what I can afford is good value. And I think Tim, I would have still answered it the same way as you would have by the sounds of it, is what's the regular green fee? Is the membership a multiple of that, which makes sense for me? If I was in the 80 quid a round bracket for a green fee on a weekly basis, and I go, okay, let's take, was it North Hants we played, Ben, a while back? And that was 90 quid for a green fee to turn up and play. But the membership was only, I think, 1,800 quid. So in that sense, I go, the membership is good value, because to play it week in, week out, it would be super expensive. Just as a green fee, it makes sense to join as a member. So I think for me, there's that side of it. And then it just, because there will always be people that can afford that. There will be people that will pay and become members at each tier of like that niche next like bracket jump. So I don't think it's necessarily just a...
Yeah, but like my point about bringing the price in, like I said, you've got to be more than 50 miles from the club. Bear in mind, I think I'm 39 miles from the club, and that's an hour and a half drive. You think that's a hell of a long way. If you're going to break down the 2K, say hypothetically I were able to make it back there 10 times green fee.
Yeah, but that's, again, the type of club that you're looking at. I know which club you're looking at. They're not aimed, the out of town membership isn't aimed at you. It's aimed at people who are literally flying in from a different country who are going to play four times a year and need a base. Like it's not looking at Ben Fowlis, who's 33 miles.
You can go and play Pebble Beach
in
for
London.
That. I'm just saying. If you're playing it four times a year.
So I think you're, from that perspective, it's different. That clubs, loads of clubs offer the tiered membership. So if you're 29, you pay X percent of the full membership. If you're 30, you pay X percent plus two, and I get it, but I also go, why would someone who's 33 have to pay 300, 400, 500, 600 quid a year more than 32? Like that doesn't quite make sense, but I totally get what they're doing. They're doing exactly what you said, Ben, where it's, you've got to allow people to, you know, grow into it. But I imagine all that happens is people go, oh, right, next year it's the full membership instead of half. Yeah, I can't afford that anymore. Sorry. Which is where I think this tiered approach that like your mate was doing and Tom McGill.
Do you think this isn't more commonly seen because it would be seen by the golf club as like, well, they've not got as much emotional buy-in to the club. They're not going to offer much from an actual member perspective.
It's new thinking. Yeah, it's totally new thinking, and there's all kinds of. I imagine if there is a golf general, you know, managers, club secretaries forum somewhere, I imagine people would be totally against that idea, thinking it's not going to work. Understanding, we should probably just get Tom on the show, shouldn't we? My understanding is that it's worked really well at Guildford, and that they've dramatically grown their membership as a result of it, because people who like us who just wouldn't justify the full membership rate because we don't play physically, because we don't play enough golf, not because, like you said, Timbo, we're probably already spending that amount, right? So it's not actually a financial decision at this point. There's just other factors that come into it. What that reduced rounds allows us to do is go, yep, I get to be part of a club, I get to play X amount of rounds over the year, and I still get the chance to play two rounds a month or one round a month with my mates somewhere else. And I think that's a huge thing for me. And again, one big thing about joining a club that limits you to one club, I like variety. Mm. I like playing different courses. If there was and I know lots of golf clubs do it. They all say, well, you can go play Golf Club X, or you can go do this. And like, I know even Purford, owned by Get Golfing, I know you get rights at the different golf clubs, but they're all, you know, none of them are close, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like, oh, I can just pop down the road to a club. The next move for me for golf clubs is proper partnering with different golf clubs, proper collaboration where 12 clubs within Surrey all partner, and they have and I know it happens. Like, I know people are gonna be like, Chris, this happens, but it doesn't really. Like, you can't just go and book online in, you know, from your membership. You can't, you know, there's still restrictions on when and what you can play, whatever. I think there needs to be proper collaboration between 12 different golf clubs in an area, and you buy a membership at one and you get access to all of them X number of times a year or whatever. That for me then becomes very interesting. A proper setup like that, I go, okay. And especially if you think, okay, well, we've now got 24 clubs in and around the southeast. Ben, you become a member of Toot Hill. Tim becomes a member of, what was your favourite new club, Tim? North Downs. I become a member of Guildford. But we've actually got 20 different courses along that southeast belt that we can play. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sold. Yeah. Like, and I think for me, that's the difference.
And for the amount of time that you spend looking for and working within golf, you think you'd be the first person to be targeted by social media adverts if that were to be the case. So I've got a feeling you'd know about
and
it before.
Look, I know, because people listen to me like, well, my club has relationships with 37 different clubs, and it exists. But I don't think it yet this in a way that makes life easy to do it. Like, I want to be able to just, once I'm logged into my account, right, I can just book a round for me, Ben and Tim, even though we're all members at different clubs at Course Y.
Or even just...
Why doesn't that exist?
Or even just, oh, this weekend I really fancy playing that course. Or, and the next week, oh, actually, I want to play... actually quite fancy playing that course, or I'd like to get on at that time, or it's convenient for me to play that course as opposed to that the other course this weekend.
Yeah. And it does happen within the group. So if you, there's a group called the Club Company who own a whole different bunch of courses. You can, like, if you're a member at a club company, you can go and play the other courses. I'm not really talking about just courses within the same group. I'm talking about a whole group of courses owned by different people in, you know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
I wonder if there's something in that business wise for kind of England golf. You know, they made this switch this year to go nomads, you know, 40 quid a year and you get your handicap. You know, they, at the end of the day, they have contacts in every single golf club up and down the country. I'm surprised we haven't seen a tiering system of membership which allows you to go and play. Here's a bottom tier, which is your X amount per month. Here's a middle tier, which allows you to go and play these courses for X amount. So then you've got...
I don't think it would be their responsibility to do that. Yes, that makes sense, 100%. It will be a private company that goes and does it. It already happened. The problem, and it would be a private company that will do it,
yeah.
The problem becomes more the buy-in from the golf clubs. What it really needs, Ben, is someone within... like, it just needs one golf club to take charge and actually just go, this is what we're going to do. But because I do think that would dramatically improve membership yet again. I think it would... I like the idea of what Tom's doing at Guildford. I really like that. I like what you said your mate's club's doing. I think that's going to have a huge impact. Make it so that it's a no, like there is a quote unquote a nomad membership sold. It's no more admin cost. It's no, like it's all the same cost. You're just creating a partnership that allows them to play. Although to be fair, there might be an extra admin cost in terms of, okay, you've got the tech to do this, but a private company sets up that tech and they sell it into golf clubs at hundreds of pounds a year or thousands, whatever, like it's worth
the,
it.
So hypothetically, all of our mates, we're in the same area. We all agreed to go and sign up for the same membership. The value per round, Tim, is excellent. How important are kind of practice facilities at the golf club for you two? If they were to have no practice facilities and say just a net and like a, you know, a bang average putting green, would that turn you away? Or the fact that all of our mates are there and that it's suitably priced, would you still just be like, actually, no, it's worth it? Timbo?
I feel like if I was at the tipping point, the practice facilities are what would seal the deal. That's how I would sort of term it, in that, well, yeah. And the availability, like opening hours of those practice facilities. Because ultimately, it's nice to be able to go to a place which is like there's a big difference between a driving range at a golf club versus a big public driving range. Firstly, secondly, yeah, the nature of the practice facility. So somewhere like Bletchingley is a good example. Good driving range, but they have a short game area as well. And I can't for the life of me think, I can probably count on one hand the number of clubs I've been to where there's actually been a proper short game area. If a club I was on the verge of joining had a range that had good opening hours, i.e. like 7 o'clock in the morning until like 10 o'clock at night, and a short game area and a putting green, I'd be like, yeah, push that button, buy that now. Because I think ultimately being able to practice is as important. Sorry, Chris, really quickly. I think when I had the kind of the points-based membership, the reason why I felt that was really good for my personal game was A, that there was kind of like a relatively quiet driving range so I could just go and do focus practice too. But it was almost a case of I could just turn up to the club, right, and decide, oh, I'll go to the driving range a bit. Oh, actually, now I want to practice putting. Oh, actually, you know, there might be some short game stuff I want to practice on a bit of a whim. And the other thing you could do is if it's like, if you've got a membership and let's say you do some twilight golf during the summer, and you get the millionaire slot of like the half six tee time for 9 holes. I don't know if clubs want me to say this or not. You know, you might be the last guy on the course and you can literally just be on the course and just practice your short game on the 7th hole, for example, and it's proper real life in situ practice. So it's mega for me having those kind of short game, those practice facilities at club is absolutely huge.
Would it be enough for you to say no if all the boys were members, but there weren't the practice facilities there?
So when I took that points-based membership out, it was entirely done so to improve me and my game, and nothing about kind of the social aspect of it. But, you know, by the same token, I could get people on for cheaper than if they were just turning up and playing. So there was a bit of that in it as well. But for me personally, the primary motivation for me to get them, for me to get membership right now would be if there's, you know, one of the guys, let's say, that wants to get membership at the same club, brilliant. But actually, it's more the case of just being able, I would see it more as a self-improvement thing right now would be a reason for taking it.
Interesting. Very interesting. Over to you, Mr. Wright.
So I think there's two sides to this. I think the real question is, would the value, coming back to that original point that Tim made, is the per round value still make sense so that I'm still can do my, because right now I'm going to the range, right? Well, not last week, but I'm already paying to go to the range now. So does the all-in cost stay the same? Yes. Yeah. Great. I mean, doesn't make a difference. If you're saying, Chris, it's actually going to cost you an extra whatever it's going to cost, so you're now bumping up, including your practice cost, but now you have to still practice somewhere else and pay for that practice somewhere else, then that becomes a bit of an issue for me.
Yeah.
So not many courses have a range. If they had excellent short game area,
I think there's two. So there are courses with ranges. Lots of them have practice areas. One thing that's still really whatever, right? One huge draw for me to join a club, if they have a good length range, offer me free range balls for the year. Don't charge me for range balls. I'm going to give you 1500 quid. Yeah. Don't charge me for range balls. Yeah. I'll be there every day. Yeah. Like,
I agree with that.
I'm like, if you said, Chris, it's free range balls, you've got a full length range, free range balls, free use of all the practice facilities. I've almost spent that in range time at Supine Ridge this year already.
And guess what happens when you turn up there every day?
I buy food. I buy a flapjack.
Yeah, there you go.
I get a Coke. That for me would be a really easy way to sell me into a membership.
Totally agree.
Chris, we've got the full length range and there's free range balls. Great. I'm in. Where, like 100%, like, and again, I think there'd be a lot of people that suddenly makes sense, like, because that makes logical sense to do. I go, right, okay, so now I literally just replace my range time that I'm practicing wherever and paying 10 to 12 a week doing, and can do that at the club for quote unquote for free. Nope, I paid the club 1500 quid, which I wasn't going to do. They've now got 1500 quid instead of nothing, or 130 quid green fee for the year. So I think for me, the range and the practice ground definitely make a big difference. The nomad golfer, 100%, the biggest issue for me is not that short game practice, without a doubt. No good, like the chipping, putting, pitching, short game areas that yes, could sway me to join a membership if they've got a good area to do that. But again, there's too many. Yeah, I think if all of us joined one club and had all these things, I'd be up for it, because I'd full well know that we could find somewhere else 2 years later and be like, let's go join this place now. And it happens. I see it. Big groups of guys and girls go join a club. 2 years later, they move on to a different club. And, you know, there's significant buying power when you turn up and say, there's 15 of us that want to join. What offer can you do for us? So, yeah, I think practice facilities does make a difference.
Yeah, I have to admit, I wrote down they would be key. Ultimately, my game is struggling because I don't really practice putting. Yeah. Outside of hitting 6 foot putts in my bedroom, it's, you know, something that I think is forever going to handicap me and handicaps most golfers. And if there's not good practice facilities, particularly on the short game, you know, as you said, if you're spending a tenner a week on the driving range, if a course and a club were to turn around and say to you, right, well, we offer free range balls, immediately you can go, well, that's 500 quid a year I've just saved. So that 500 quid, well, I can then justify
correct
towards
that. And this is why, so, when you turn around and you say, no, but you get discounted range balls, it's just going to cost you 3 quid right for 50. I'm like, why charge me? Why even put that barrier in there as a member? Like, this is mental. You want me practicing because the more I'm at the club, the better I get, the more likely I am going to stay in the future. Like, but there isn't that. It's just, no, it's, they see the extra £3 and they're like, let's get the £3.
Such a paltry amount as well.
Grand, but it's always that, right?
I mean, on their part, for a golf club that are charging £2,000 a whack for a membership, £1,500 a whack for a membership, that additional £3 a time is just not going to add a lot to them, but it's a pain in the ass.
And again, I think part of this probably comes down to who owns the range. So at Bletchingley, for example, we're talking Steve Furlonger, who's been in and around Sunday Red for ages. He owns the range. It's not the clubs. He owns it. So, you know, then you come with, okay, what's the discussion with the golf club? How does that work? Do they pay for the members' range balls? Do they pay a fee to him? Like, how would that work? So I know it's not just as simple as, you know, the club owns everything on, like, it's just not that situation. But there are so many things they could do to attract more members from that perspective, for sure.
I wholeheartedly agree. And I know that's, you know, it's not necessarily a barrier for me at this moment in time, but I know at some point in the future it's going to be. They're the questions that I'm going to be asking. Do you have this? No. Why? Fine. Well, chances are I'm going to be keen to go try somewhere else. Interesting. That kind of took a different turn than what I thought it would. So I think that's pretty good. Chaps, anything more to add on tonight?
The only thing I'll add, remember last week you were having a right bitch and mutt beginner golfers?
Oh, God. Put me tin hat on. Shit.
No, the only reason I bring that up is because I did some research and decided that you're right, there isn't enough out there to help beginner golfers. And I've started writing an epic series of articles and posts aimed at helping new people understand and get into the game. So hopefully, that probably won't be out for a while because top secret new website in process right now. But when that goes live, these articles will go on there straight away.
Nice. I'm intrigued.
I'm definitely going to need your help with some of them.
I was going to say, if you need any help with content, Jesus.
What things really annoyed you? I'm just going to listen back to that podcast and be like, right, include that. One thing that I'm genuinely struggling with, though, on the etiquette, golf etiquette, I've started writing the golf etiquette article, right? And it's just a whole lot. It's a whole list of don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Mm. I'm like, this is a really negative post. Like, how do we make this a bit more positive? Like, what's the positive spin? I can please don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. It just becomes a really like, fuck, what am I allowed to do? Like, what can I do?
Yeah. I mean, that's quite a difficult project you've taken on there, mate.
But honestly, it has realized, even just starting writing this, it has made me realize, go, wow, like there is a lot of stuff that you need to know that you can't do.
Yeah, oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And having to go, okay, so how do you make it a positive spin that you put on this so that people go, oh, great, okay, so that's because of this.
That's my thought process for a few of these episodes, actually, that we've recorded. I'm like, how do I make myself not seem like a whingy old shitbag trying to explain my round with two new golfers?
Because you're like, basically what you're allowed to do is walk in absolute silence and hit a ball and don't speak to anyone. Like, it becomes like, crap, okay, I've got to find a way to make this what you can do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, going back on to this is we all share a car on the way to golf, so if you could just give me some light reading for those two just to do in the half an hour that we drive to the course, just so the responsibility is not on my shoulders, because that's some conversations. I really don't want to be trapped in a car having that conversation.
Should I record an audiobook for you and just be like, Ben, hit play on this. Be like, I'm just listening to this new audiobook. Don't do this. Don't do that. Don't do this.
I reckon they might.
That's really interesting, guys. Did you know that? Did you know that you shouldn't stand on the green when someone's?
I'll give it 2 minutes. Their approach shot? 2 minutes before they start being suspicious. Like, this seems like a trap.
Yeah, that was it. I just wanted to let you know that I have started said writing, and I want to get that out there to the world because I think that's important.
Interesting, Mr. Williams. Anything from you? Any side hustles going on?
No, I've got nothing. I've got no business ventures to chuck into the bargain this week. I'll try and come up with some next week.
Excellent. Right, guys, that is us for this week. Thank you ever so much for tuning in. We will see you all next week.
Thanks very much.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. If you did happen to love the episode, please do us a huge favor. It'll only take 1 minute. Please go and leave us a really positive review and obviously tell all your pals about us. This week's episode was brought to you by Sunday Red Golf. Chris mentioned Sunday Red a couple of times during the show. Come and check us out. Rounds, tournaments, golf stash offers, you name it. Check out sundayredgolf.co.uk now. This week was also brought to you by Tour Champ. If you're like us, you like a little competition in your life, particularly on the golf course. So if you want to add a little spice to your rounds with your mates, come and create your own golf league for free right now at tourchamp.co.